morning and welcome everyone to Live Dharma Sunday for April 30th, 2017. Koyo Kubose here. So very, very glad you joined us this morning. Well, for those of us who are gardeners, with the warmer weather, so nice to work outside. And as you may know, I have a pretty extensive vegetable garden. Previous owners of the property had two horses, and they built this corral near the house in the area we live in. Most of people's lots in the unincorporated area have quite a bit of acreage to them, and our property is 6 acres. The smallest one maybe is 3 acres, and the largest is 9 acres in this unincorporated subdivision. But in general, the whole horse sporting area, a lot of people have horses. And so anyway, we don't have horses. So I turned the corral into the garden area and built these raised beds and grow all kind of vegetables. And I want to talk this morning about onions. this year I'm growing red onions and white onions, yellow onions, and you learn the differences in nutrition value. You learn difference in storage, length of storage for different kinds of onions. And onions, there are short day onions and long day onions. Long day onions need more hours of sunlight when they're growing in order for it to stimulate the bulb formation. And the short day onions, they do not need as many hours of sunlight. And if you have to find out what area of the country you live in, primarily, generally it's about, you know, north and south in terms of the hours of sunlight. Try to grow the wrong kind of onions, you try to grow the short. If you didn't know the difference, you might be trying to grow the, you know, you had a trouble growing onions because you're growing the wrong type. So, you know, I read books, talk to people, pick up things here and there, and you learn these different things, and how to plant them, how to take care of them, and how to harvest them, how to store them, and there's always something new to learn. And recently, the last few years, and of course the internet, that's a tremendous resource, and you could pick and choose the kinds of relevant information that you find helpful. And I'm looking at one that I printed out, it's tips for growing onions with large bulbs, and I'm looking at it here. If you want larger bulbs, here's some other tips. Grow the onions until the stalks are about 9 inches tall, then cut the green stalks in half, so only about 4 or 5 inches remain of the stalk. Then let them grow again till they're about 12 inches tall and cut them in half again to 6 inches. Do this 3 times, and this will force more energy into the roots, which will promote larger bulbs. And then after 3 times, wait until the onions mature. And when you see the tips of the stalks getting brown, 4 inches at the top, cut the water off to the onions at this point. Wait a month before harvesting. This will promote a better storage capacity for the onions and better sweetness. At this point, knock the stalks over with the rake in one direction, 90 degrees down to the ground, leaving the bulbs still in the ground. Then after a week, pull the bulbs out, lay them on their side, let them dry for at least 2 days. Then flip them over the other direction and dry the other sides. By letting them cure at least 3 days in the sun, it will make them less acidic and it will turn enzymes into sweetness. Then after this, don't remove the dirt on the onions themselves, because this will fool the onions a little bit that they're still in the ground and they won't start to break down. This will give you several more weeks of storage and so forth. The reason for sharing this with you this morning is cutting the stalks, you know, when the onion plant is still young. If you have no experience in gardening at all, pruning is sort of counterintuitive. You want things to grow. You don't want to cut them. You know, and this is one of the early things that people get interested in gardening learn. Okay? And it applies in general to a lot of things. How you have to prune, not just to shape a tree or a bush, but to promote health. So cutting back the onion stalks, the onion bulb, and in the same way, I use this as a metaphor for a teaching, that cutting back one's self-centered attitude, one's ego, can help to bulk up our spiritual core. Huh? Isn't that, I think that's pretty neat. In a way, it's sort of like, well, maybe it's a variation of monks and nuns that shave their head, or they do not wear colorful clothes. They maybe wear black robes or, you know, whatever, and because they should not be concerned with vanity, okay, appearance and so forth. They want to concentrate on spiritual concerns. So anything that can give us the perspective of more humility, more gratitude, these are things that then you start to understand the reality of suchness, reality as it is, not how we want it to be. Okay? Changes our foundation. Okay? So in a way, cutting your hair off the top of your head, so that you're not just concerned with your appearance and vanity and so forth, then your center of spiritual gravity, you know, it bulks out. And so I think maybe, just as an aside, when you get older, nature takes care of you, compensates. When you get older, you lose your hair, okay, especially if you're a man, and your waistline starts to bulk out. And I could see this as a kind of a spiritual center of gravity being, I don't know if it's related to why in the East they talk about the hara, or, you know, a couple of inches below your belly button as your center. Okay? You're grounded. So maybe you could start to play with this metaphor, okay? And makes a lot of sense. Well, I want to introduce today's guest to give us a Dharma glimpse, Roger Sayol. And he was part of our LM5 group, and originally from the Atlanta area. He and his wife, Dorothy Merrick, went through the program together. They lived in Jacksonville, Florida for many years, and then just recently relocated back to the Atlanta area. And so let us hear from Roger Sayol.
So this week's Dharma Glimpse is about a topic I don't often think about. That's the first noble truth. The truth of suffering. Mostly I think about this truth as just a bad translation of dukkha. It's a Sanskrit word that comes from early written texts, and it's sometimes translated not as suffering, but just as unsatisfactoriness. Unsatisfactoriness seems much more applicable than suffering to most of my life. But recently, life reintroduced me to the pure, strong, and unadulterated version of dukkha. I'm a practice leader of a Zen meditation group that meets Thursday evenings. This time of year, things start in the late afternoon and conclude in the dark of evening. So several weeks ago, after concluding meditation and talking with some of the members, I was one of the last to leave. The meditation group meets in a friendly business that has a parking lot that empties directly onto a four-lane highway. It was very dark when I left, and all the cars on the highway had their lights on. After checking for traffic coming from my left, I pulled into the right-hand lane and was accelerating when suddenly, wham, I was rear-ended by a car I never saw. I was thrown forward against my seatbelt and immediately pulled off the highway into a free left turn lane. I put my flashers on and walked back to the other car while calling 911 and reporting the accident. I was shaken, but not stirred, but I wasn't able to operate my cell phone camera, even though I was able to call my wife and the police to report the accident and then wait for the police. Briefly, the police came and determined that while all the damage to my car was on the direct rear and all the damage to the other car was on their direct front end, a situation I thought was a clear vindication of my innocence, I got a citation for failure to yield to oncoming traffic. If I had left the parking lot 10 seconds earlier or 10 seconds later, this would not have happened. But as a result, I've been suffering in various ways from this accident. All of this has led me to reflect on the Dharma of suffering. Dukkha, or suffering, that Gautama offers a path out of is complex. The suffering of suffering, and the suffering that arises from dependent origination. I've thought of these three forms of suffering as monastic overthinking, but I've concluded that there is a deep understanding of the complexity of life in these three forms of suffering. So here's my take on this. I've suffered physical pain, headaches from this accident, and I've suffered from questioning my own role. Did I cause an accident or was I a victim of another's carelessness? This is the suffering of suffering, the first of the three types of suffering that Buddhism discusses. But also, my car is completely totaled. My 2003 Toyota that I anticipated using for another 150,000 miles is no longer usable. This is the suffering due to change. Anything that arises will pass away. My Toyota has gone to the great junkyard and is no longer a part of my life. It's required dealing with repair shops, insurance, car rentals, discovering that the car was still titled to my mother, having to find her will and show I'm the estate executor, and so on. So I'm suffering from this unexpected change in my life. But beyond that, there is a deeper level of suffering that arises. I realize that my confidence in myself is shaken. The attentive person that I have thought of myself as being is challenged. I haven't measured up to my own expectations. And more deeply, this is not the sort of thing that I want from life. This is the suffering that arises from conditioned experience. I suppose it is the karma that arises from previous causes and conditions that I've assumed are benign. So I become deeply aware of the first noble truth. Life is the teacher, and life is teaching me about the deep nature of suffering. Thank you.
Thank you very much, I hope. Well, indeed. proceeding as smoothly as possible under the conditions. Many times when things happen, accidents and so forth, after they happen, then we have a certain kind of thankfulness that it wasn't worse or and such and such. But indeed, it causes us to reflect on all these aspects. I mean, it's, you know. Life is always giving us these things. We don't have to, you know. Well, I think about phrases from my father, like black is white, meaning in the spiritual world, misfortune is fortune, in the sense that we learn so much from suffering in life. It's a tremendous teacher. And life is full of these things because, and this is something so basic, parents teach the real young children, say, hey, you don't always get what you, things don't always go the way you want in life. Okay, and we have to learn that lesson in a lot of different kind of ways as adults all through our lives. And the Dharma of suffering, yeah, and the pervasiveness of the First Noble Truth. Sometimes someone new to Buddhism, very new, said, well, what's Buddhism about? And then you tell them about the First Noble Truth. They say, life is suffering. What kind of a teaching is this? No, they want something optimistic, positive. Takes a lot of, deeper understanding about the Dharma of suffering to realize. Not only is it realistic, but it has a positiveness there in terms of what it means to be a human being, what it means to be born, and what's the purpose of life. And dukkha, it's a Pali word. I think the literal meaning is thirst. You're suffering, you're thirsty. You have no water when you're thirsty. And of course, there's the Buddha talked about the different types of suffering, basic types of suffering, okay, and so forth. And I remember one of our, I think it was LM4 students, he had a little song about dukkha. And it goes, the melody is dukkha in the morning, dukkha in the afternoon, dukkha. I don't remember what the title of that melody was, but we all had to smile and look that up, what the melody of that was. And another person made the interesting observation that why is it called a noble truth? Why don't you say, here is the truth, the first truth of life? Okay. Noble. Said because in the face of this universality of dukkha, we could still live a very noble life, isn't it? You know, this is tremendous. That the Buddha, his teachings were all about dealing with suffering. That was it. All about the well-known story of the four gates when he went out. We saw, physical sickness, old age, death. Hey, how can you live knowing that these things are inevitable for my loved ones, for myself? Hey. And it's a curse or that human beings even though as adults we know these truths, realities of life, we take it for granted, life for granted, and we think we're immortal. Okay? We think we're going to live forever. We forget. Okay? And a very basic teaching is about preciousness, you know, the impermanence of physical life itself. Okay? And you could think that one basic being born and being a human being and purpose of life is to confront this. And you can see it in as a broad theme in literature and art and so forth. How do you live life? How do you figure this out? And of course, that's probably the basis for the creation or of religion itself. And human beings had to say, hey, figuring this out. Religions trying to help meet, and of course, different religions do it in different ways. I remember my father gave a talk. I in his office came across a program of a conference. It was in the 50s, early 50s. And he was one of the speakers, I guess, and each of the speakers had wrote an article about their talk, and it was printed in the program. Buddhism as a religion, as a approach, as a philosophy, as a way of life, what are the different attitudes or, you know, orientation of human beings to their human situation? He said one is that they have, human beings have, are essentially have no control over their own lives. This is their experience, you know, and all kind of things happen, and so they need to ask a deity, supernatural deity, for help. And this is petitionary prayer. This is, or as some people put it in a more, you know, vernacular way, is this is beggar's religion. Okay. I'm have no power, I'm powerless and everything, so I have to look to the all-powerful deity. Okay. Now, and then a second approach to life is to say, well, again, so many things happen, we don't understand, you know, and it's just chaos, and things happen for no reason. An accident, or you get sick, or whatever. In the broad scheme, you say, why? Why? Don't know. And this is where this approach is, that things are just happen by chance, by randomness. And then what follows if you follow this kind of philosophy of life, say, well, gee, I'm just tossed around like a cork in the sea. And, well, of course, one obvious option is to become a hedonist. Well, I better enjoy myself, okay, and so forth. Okay. And the vernacular label would be, this is the way of the gambler. Okay. Well, we don't know that. You know, it's a crapshoot. Life is, you know, you take your chances. Then there's Buddhism, which says there are causes for things, and that you have an input in your life. Okay? If you understand karma, not just as a moral aspect, do good and good things come back and so forth, but causes and conditions, dependent origination, interdependency, samaprakti, causes and conditions for everything. What arises, it comes down. What's born, dies. That is the natural laws of nature, natural laws. Okay? And the more we could understand this, the more we realize that we too have an input into this. and how we view things. It's completely different, fundamental philosophy, perspective, attitude toward life. And it was a very interesting article about the basics, about, you know, which way you're going to face. What's your direction in life? What's your basic attitude? Causes and conditions. In Japanese, it's called innen, I-N-N-E-N. One part of it, two Chinese characters, one part is conditions, and then the other is causes. So causes are the more immediate reason for what happens. Okay. And it depends upon all kinds of other conditions too. So in this sense, it's very not against science in terms of knowledge about the world and about oneself. The world is relatively easier to understand this viewpoint, but as I said, the crux of being a human being is we forget about this, okay? And we forget about life's realities, and we just get, and that's why we suffer. Things don't happen the way we want them to happen or expect them to happen. Ideas of what's good and bad, fair and unfair, and all this comes in. It's counter to the basics of the first noble truth. Hey, this is life. You know, in nature, death is not a bad thing. Predators and, you know, just naturalness of life and death. And but we, through our dichotomous dualities and so forth, our minds, we get alienated from the oneness of life. Well, I'm just carrying on. That's all for today's broadcast. Till next time. Keep going, and you have a wonderful day. Thank you.